So hi, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Lisa Lorraine Smith, and I'm the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And today I am joined by the chair of your affinity group, who will be leading our discussion, Dr. Elaine Rotenberg from Outpert JFS in West Palm Beach, and also my colleague, Tricia Stern, who is the Vice President of Adolescent and Family Mental Health here at the network. So I think we have some new people who haven't been here before. You want to just raise your hand so we can see who you are. Rosanna, have you been? Yeah. Anyone else? Sarah? Great. Welcome, Melissa. Okay, I'm so glad to see new people.
Can you all put your cities in where you're from?
You can rename yourselves and put your city, and that would be great. And we hope you join us in conversation. You'll catch on real quick. So Elaine, take it away.
Okay, thanks. Hi, everybody. It really is good to see so many new faces and some really nice to see some of you that we haven't seen in a while. So I want to start before we kind of jump into our topic and that we're all going to kind of facilitate with each other. There's a couple of specific announcements and things on a kind of broader level, clinically related, that I want to make sure that we share with this group, and you then can kind of make sure you're talking to your staff about. And let me hand it over to Tricia to just talk about a couple of points.
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. I agree. Good to see you all and some new faces. So just a couple of things we wanted to let you know that are happening in the network. The first is related to the 988 National Hotline, which on the 16th, moved to 988. So just like you plug in 911 for emergencies, if you plug in 988, that takes you to the National Crisis and Suicide Hotline. We at the network are hosting a talk on the hotline exactly a week from now, July 28th at 3 p.m. Eastern. And we're going to have Dr. John Palmieri, who is the director of the 988 line, come and talk to us. The first half, we will be giving some information, more information about 988, and then Dr. Palmieri will join us. So we hope you will join us for that.
I just want to say something about that, Tricia. Yeah. I think not only would it be great if as many as possible could have a representative at that meeting, but we've also talked about on a network level, sort of keeping our eyes and ears open for opportunities for us as a sector to sort of have our own kind of crisis response initiative. So I feel this way with my own agency, and then on a parallel process with the network, that I always try to pay attention to what it is that we as an agency want to do, but then look at the broader community to see how we can integrate those things. So this is the opportunity to understand sort of what the broader country is doing related to this issue. And then to make sure we don't, to me, that's how we as an agency have always, and I think we as a network can grow things almost on a grassroots level, but without duplicating and without stepping on each other's toes and with maximizing efficiency, because my philosophy is always that there is plenty of need to go around.
Yes.
So we don't have to worry about stepping on people's toes if we do it correctly.
Yes, that's a great point. And I know we will be talking about that because it's a national hotline.
Correct.
It's staffed locally. And I know there's not enough. Yeah. On that, or they're struggling with that. So that will definitely be talked about.
Right.
Then the week after that, on Thursday, August 4th, will be our youth and families clinical services meeting. We'll be talking about evidence-based mindfulness approaches for helping youth with emotion regulation. And then this is sort of the preamble of, I know there's going to be a lot of discussions, and we at the network are hearing it, and as a clinician myself, just the weight of dealing with all that is happening in the world with the shootings, with government decisions. And so we really want to respond to that. So we will be offering two groups, drop-in safe spaces. I will be facilitating one for clinicians, which will be the second Wednesday of the month at 1 p.m. So the next one will be August 10th. And then Lisa and Elaine will be doing one for other agency staff members. So stay tuned for more details on those.
Great. Which is a wonderful segue to today's topic.
Wait a minute, one last thing. And that came up, this whole thing. I was muted, so I couldn't say anything. During a CEO-COO check-in chat, which is basically like the neck group for CEOs and COOs, and they were saying that, you know, they feel like they need it. So many people in their agencies need it. So we decided as a team that we would divide it up between clinicians who are dealing with it personally and then also with their clients and others. So that's why we have two separate groups. Just wanted to make that clear. Okay, go ahead, Elaine.
Which is a perfect segue. I think the idea of splitting it that way, by the way, is going to be interesting. And Tricia, we can also talk a little bit more offline, if you like, also about the clinician meeting, so because I have some thoughts about that as well. So, but anyhow, that is a great segue to why 78 people signed up today for today's meeting, because when Lisa and I, we always talk about like, well, what do we want our agenda to be at our clinical net meetings. And what's interesting is that there are always plenty of topics and specifics that, and I'm just going to just as a shout out and reminder that you guys get to email me and Lisa if there's a particular hot issue, even a more administrative program specific thing that you're like, I really want to make sure we all talk about it because I want to know what the heck is happening with people's waiting lists, or I want to know what's happening with. So those kinds of things are all fair game for this meeting as well. So I want to really, you know, make sure people continue to communicate, because this is sort of our, like they say with the CEO COO meeting, this is our meeting. This is like our space to, you know, do trainings, but also to like, in some ways, like allow us our space to sort of commiserate on shared issues that have come up in terms of our program. So when we talked about what was going to happen for today, Lisa asked me that. I think it was shortly after Uvalde. And I was like, the words that came to my mind were, you know, just piling on, just that two words. And I remember when I heard I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, but first there was, I can't even remember now which came first, Roe v. Wade or Uvalde. It's all a blur to me. I don't know. Somebody can maybe tell me which
Uvalde,
one
Uvalde, I think.
You see, we think, because when, so I remember, Uvalde. Right? Because when somebody said to me after Uvalde, and then I heard, okay, my daughter works at CNN and she texted me and she said, okay, out of the mouth of a 30-year-old, I think you ought to like pay attention to what's happening on the news today. And I'm like, what? She said, no more Roe v. Wade overturns. And I'm like, but the only thing I said to her was, wow, piling on. And so I said to Lisa, that's what our topic needs to be. And the ongoing discussion about like where we are in terms of the work that we're doing. I'll just start by telling you that I just still sit in clinical meetings with professionals across all of our different programs. And just see, I don't want to call it burnout. I see sometimes a lot of glaziness. I see us trying to like hang on to the, this is really great that we all know how to work remotely. I see a lot of the, you know, trying to give ourselves the attaboys and we're all resilient and stuff like that. And I see a lot of exhaustion. And I see in my agency right now, we have 5 full-time intake workers, and I have a callback response. Number of calls to still be called are 100. I've got a waiting list of dozens to be seen in therapy. And then in the middle of it, you have your professional staff, your therapist, your psychiatrist, your care managers. And so you guys came here today for a reason. So I'm hoping some of it was positive and some of it was maybe some, you know, brilliant comments and interventions and things or whatever, but I'm going to like really open it up and see where we are. And if somebody wants to kind of make this a little more focused about what you want to, you know, get out of today, I'm happy to hear that too. Okay. Take yourselves all off of mute. Oh, let's just breathe, Lisa. People just came here to breathe. They just appreciated the topic. Rosanna, did you want to say something?
As you were speaking, what resonated with me, my name is Rosanna Mignoni. I'm a manager of the community mental health program at the Cummings Jewish Center for Seniors in Montreal. I have a team of five full-time, the title that we use is case managers in our center. And obviously I meet with my team individually in team meetings, as well as, you know, individual supervision. And when you said exhausted, they're exhausted. Like, I almost think that during the pandemic, when everything, we had a lot of lockdowns in Montreal. I'm not sure about the States, but we're on our seventh wave now. There's a press conference this afternoon at 2:00, so I don't know what they're going to report then. But almost as if during the pandemic, they were less exhausted. I think now they're more exhausted. I think it's accumulated over the 2.5 years. At the beginning, they were kind of just going with the flow and dealing whatever had to be done. And but right now we have more clients that are in crisis. I don't know. I think it's just accumulated for clients as well. And a lot of dumping on the case managers, a lot of like yelling, and they know obviously it's not personal, but it's just, you know, there's almost so much screaming you can take in one day from five different clients, you know. And the way I see it is, obviously I'm a manager, I don't have clients, but I really look at my team. Even though we're small, we do a lot at the center in regards to individual casework, plus we have our programming that we have for our clients as well. And I mean, I really look at my team as my clients. You know, I have to take care of them. We start supervision with, it's not what's happening with your clients, because, you know, sometimes we can check all the boxes and tie all the bows, and at the end of the day, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But I have to ensure that they're okay so that they can do their work.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's, I'm sure it's busy across, yeah, for everyone on the screen, but
Rosanna,
constantly, you know, ensuring Rosanna, that they're okay.
Rosanna, parallel, yeah, process, which is why I really just wanted that to be this topic.
Yeah.
Is this is sort of the network's way of making sure that we who are kind of leading this clinical work are okay too, and for having, sure, that space to do that.
For sure.
And I think it's, you know, the matter of fact and the practicals and all that stuff, but yeah. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak for everyone else, but I'm sure I saw a lot of head nodding when I was talking. So especially
Amanda and Brooke, where they were bobble dolls. So you better,
yeah,
speak.
So yeah, I appreciate even just acknowledging what I was saying felt good, you know. So
right,
yeah.
Thank you.
So yeah, there's a lot going on.
Amanda, yeah. Brooke, one of you want to speak?
Definitely agree with your clinicians and your case managers and the people that, you know, do the work as well. I take on a caseload as well, but, you know, it's the clinicians that have more cases than I do. I'm doing a lot more administrative work kind of behind the scenes. And I also want to introduce one of my clinicians, Hannah, who's joined me. And this topic actually wound up stirring up a conversation and a discussion that we actually just had like 2 minutes ago, but it's a little bit more of a debate. So I don't want to present it necessarily right now, but if there's time later on, I think that it could be really helpful for clinicians to process, you know, even it was about note taking and what maybe we wouldn't put in our notes now that some of the legislation has changed. And Hannah brought up a really good point about abortion. And she was like, I don't know if I would indicate that in a note now, you know, if a client moves to a different state and stuff. So that was what was presented, but I don't necessarily need to go into more detail if that's not the the route that we want to go down right now?
Well, first of all, I'm making a note, no pun intended. I'm making a note of that because that's not a little issue. It's a big issue.
Yeah.
What do we do about that? There's so many different legislative things that are we going along for the ride, or at what point do we get to do some of the driving? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the question I've been thinking about, because I know the network's been doing a really wonderful job, and I've been fortunate to be part of some of this in terms of, you know, making sure we have a little bit of voice in the driving around issues related to telehealth and what's going to be covered by insurances. And it's nice to know that we're wanting to do part of the driving. But you may bring up a fascinating issue about documentation in a country where Roe v. Wade was now, in a country where there is no national protection, right, for abortion. I guess that's what would be, it's state by state. So I guess it's, the idea is that on a national level, there's no protection. So it's an interesting issue.
We had a meeting with the emergency financial and case managers yesterday, I think, and Elizabeth Cullen, who is our new NJHSA Washington representative, spoke about it. And that recording is in our library, and it was quite good. The PowerPoint's good.
Lisa,
there's so many resources.
Tell everybody, Lisa, do you want to tell everybody again how to get to the resource library? We have some new people.
I'll put it into the chat. Everyone has the same username and password. But if you're interested in finding out about that, Brooke, I'm telling you, you should go to the resource library and listen to her 20-minute PowerPoint, and then look at all the resources, because it was very well done.
Thank you. Let's go back to where, if we can, where else are people wanting to share?
I was just going to add on to that a bit. I'm Melissa. This is my first meeting. I'm happy to be here.
Hi, Melissa.
I'm the Vice President of Clinical Services at JFCS in Tucson, Arizona. And we're in a little bit of a unique place with our state. Tucson is kind of like a blue dot in a big red sea. And so this has obviously been coming up for us with clients in supervision, with myself and supervisors. And most of the questions have been about documentation. In Arizona, there was the potential for a personhood law, which I know is in other states as well, coming up, which gives a fetus full rights as a human being. So when that came up, there was a lot of concern regarding mandatory reporting laws. And it was being said that if someone shared in session that they were considering abortion, that they were going to have an abortion, that that would be something that clinicians would need to report as child abuse. And I'm seeing everyone around the room. I think we're all from different parts of the country, I saw someone from Austin, so they might be in a similar place. That obviously puts lots of questions into the air. And we have people who are really scared. I think primarily because none of us would want to report that ever. I'm a clinician myself. I don't see people anymore, but I think there's that ethical quandary as far as being a social worker and the social work code of ethics and counselor code of ethics. As well as not wanting to lose your license. And the Arizona board is pretty sticky about a lot of things. They're pretty picky about a lot of things. So I reached out to the executive director of the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners, our regulatory authority, and just said this question is coming up a lot, not just about mandatory reporting, but what Brooke was saying, just like, how do you put this in progress notes? Should we be avoiding certain language? Should we be more vague than we might have been in the past? And just asking if they were issuing any guidance as a board. The summary of the email I got back was no. They're not giving any type of guidance, that we kind of have to make those decisions. But it's definitely on everyone's mind. There's a lot of fear. And even though the personhood bill was blocked, as of right now, there's a lot of fear of what if that happens in the future. this could ruin someone's life. So any other guidance from others, we're definitely in that space. And I feel for all of us.
That's really interesting. I guess you could take that to another step, which I really haven't thought about, which would be if somebody is talking to you about thinking about suicide, right? Think somebody who's pregnant and thinking about suicide. You know, yes, you may
absolutely
think about involuntary hospitalization psychiatrically, but is there going to be a point at which that becomes a mandatory report to Department of Social Services? I've not seen, and I think that's something, I don't know, Lisa, if you've come across it or Tricia, but I think I'm going to also look in my, you know, with the psychology regs. I don't know whether or not I've seen much written about that in terms of documentation guidelines. I really haven't. I know I haven't. I mean, I just don't know if other people have or not.
Have you, Tricia? Heard about anything? I know people are talking about it.
I just need to excuse myself for 1 minute. I'm sorry. I'll be right back.
Have I heard about around,
you know, documentation? What I know that Texas is really dealing with it, Florida, right? Arizona.
Yeah. I haven't heard. I think everyone, like Melissa was saying, is sort of scrambling and sort of trying to think. I think we don't know a lot yet. And, you know, Elaine's taking notes, I'm taking notes, you know, maybe we have Elizabeth come to the script or someone who can help us, you know, NASW, somebody, I mean, everyone's, I think, looking at this, this issue now. And I think Melissa brought up two good points, or maybe it was Brooke actually brought up about that. It's both around, you know, the Dobbs decision, but it's also about the new gun bill that went through. There are things in there about mental health reporting, which I think we should also get more clarity.
I think part of the challenge of this, though, you guys, is that some of the clarity, because I even see this in terms of like stuff being written about what's going to happen with, you know, the telehealth this and that and whatever. And some of it is that there really isn't much clarity for a lot of these things yet. And so the thing I wanted to say is that somebody also talked about the accumulated stress of COVID. What we're dealing with in COVID land is the challenge to manage uncertainty. Okay. Human beings right now are dealing with what they call ambiguous losses. Like it's just managing uncertainty. To me, that's what the universal shift has been. It's like, life was always uncertain. We never knew if you'd step outside and get hit by a bus, okay? But what I think COVID did was change our landscape such that that issue of the uncertainty within which we live was sort of given to us on a silver platter and said, this is going to be the thing you now carry with you everywhere, in every situation, always, regardless of what it is. And so now we have that as humans, and then as professionals, the answers to these questions are not yet there. The questions are just, I mean, it's in a sense, as a social scientist, I think it's fascinating, if we don't lose our minds during this, I think it's fascinating to realize that we are living in a research experiment. I mean, we're living in the time right now that the hypotheses, for those of you who've done research, the hypotheses are just being formed right now. You know, we're asking the questions, what happens if in a progress note in this state the stuff we're asking right now, the answers are going to be in the books 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. Okay, so I think to me, what this time right now, which is why spaces like this are so important, is that we require ourselves to find a space to say, breathe, we need some perspective, the answers aren't there, let's not panic ourselves with the fact that the answers aren't there. Because anxiety, and you can remind ourselves and our clients this, anxiety has a lot to do with scaring ourselves, okay? And we do that. We're really good at scaring ourselves anyhow on a good day. And now we're in a world where the backdrop is uncertainty. So it's all rife for that. So taking the minute and saying, okay, not knowing is a place to be.
And our clients are all uncertain.
I had a supervisor once that said, not knowing is knowing something. And sometimes we have to learn to be okay with that. We are in the place called not knowing. And if you can give that to someone, sometimes they can breathe around that. But that said, I think us staying abreast here through Elizabeth, through our own like NASW, through APA, about some of where the trends are going, and then being sure that we bring that back to each other. Great points, you guys. I hadn't thought about that in terms of the gun legislation. And mental health professionals hate documentation on a good day. What else? How are other people feeling? Lisa,
I'm
maybe
tired. I'm tired. That's what I can say.
A lot of you aren't on screen today.
Roseanne from Chicago.
Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, how are you guys? It's nice to see a Rosanna on the call today. That's kind of fun. I'm having a hard time even formulating what I want to say, except to say that on top of everything else going on, of course, in Chicago, we serve residents of Highland Park, and we have staff that live in Highland Park. So we've been powerfully impacted. You know, everyone says it can't happen to us. And certainly the shooting on the 4th of July has had a dramatic impact on us, on our community. It is so hard to imagine. And then kind of, as we've said so much today, the parallel process, I'm also dealing with personal issues. And I only bring that just to name it, that each of us has our own families to deal with and our own health crises and issues to deal with. And it's so hard to separate my emotional reactions at this point, my concern for my loved one, and what's happening nationally, what's happening in our programs, how we're serving clients, being three staff short, how do I triage and manage the needs of everyone on my wait list. I'm at the point now when I look at that list, I feel like it's just like a weeping wound that there's so much pain. It's so much pain to hold.
And you've been talking about that wait list for a few months now. I mean, when we
get
calls, I mean, so that hasn't changed. And
now it hasn't
after this, you know, July 4th shooting.
Yeah. And in fact, we've had to close our wait list, which we've never.
You've had what?
We've had to close the wait list. We've had to, because I can't hold it all. I can't hold all the pain. So what we're doing now is getting our front door, our intake staff, just to provide resources, because I can't keep doing it. I just can't keep hearing everyone's pain, triaging it, assessing it, figuring out where they can go or how long they're gonna have to wait with us. So never have seen anything like this. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. So no answers. I know you don't have answers, but that's what I want to name today.
Well, we want to share that with you and provide a space to at least hear you on that, you know?
Yeah. Thank you.
And in terms of Highland Park, did that also, that touched your agency personally, right?
Absolutely. Yes. Very directly. Yeah.
Highland Park is a very Jewish community, right?
Very, right. Absolutely. Very
like
Jewish.
In community. Pittsburgh, you know, that, mm-hmm. that community was also mm-hmm. impacted.
On my small team, I have three staff that live in Highland Park. We have many other staff, of course, throughout the organization, but we're very much rooted in that area. Yeah.
Terrible.
And it could be any area. I know that, you know, naming this, it's not just that community. This is everywhere, and the threat of this is everywhere. So, you know. came home for us here very dramatically, but we all know it's just a second away and it can happen anywhere. And we especially know that in our Jewish communities.
Well, the network is really trying to figure out a way to, as Tricia knows, we're having a meeting to talk about it on Monday, how we can train some clinicians in the network so that they can train other clinicians or be, you know, resources for all of us if this happens. So we want to bring in some experts, the Israel Trauma Coalition or someone to do that. So that's something that's in the works, as it were. But, you know, because what Roseanne said is so true, it could happen to any of us. And we have to be prepared as best as we can be. And that's a sad state of affairs.
Right. And when Israel Trauma came in here, Lisa, when they came to Florida after Stoneman Douglas shooting.
Parkland?
In Parkland, yeah. They came in and that's where we actually, their response in terms of training was to teach the responders the basic PH, because their whole premise is that when you're in a situation like that, you know, you can only help people try to find anything within themselves to muster up, you know, because the other stuff is just, you can't grapple with that at the front end. It's too much. Asher had his hand up.
Thank you. We don't, at Zaka, we don't deal with, thankfully, we don't deal with any mass shootings. But obviously the Dobbs decision has kind of hit us like a ton of bricks, especially since in the lead up, since the decision leaked, we've been trying to tell people to make them understand, regardless of where they are in the political spectrum, that it's logistically impossible to create a carve out for what you need a carve out for. You cannot create a carve out for medical exceptions. You can't create a carve out for sexual abuse. It's not possible. Like as evidenced by the fight that the federal government is now having with Texas over you know, mandating that hospitals provide abortion as a form of emergency care. So now, you know, now we're at Zaka, you know, kind of, we were very scared of what was going to happen as the, you know, after Dobbs' decision was actually published and Roe v. Wade was overturned. And then we saw this case in Ohio and Indiana of the 10-year-old girl who was sexually assaulted and became pregnant and had to travel over state lines to get an abortion. The abortion doctor is being prosecuted now or investigated. And, you know, there was this big culture war push against the narrative of this story to try to suppress it and claim it was fake because it's an inconvenient truth for people who have not supported abortion rights, that this sort of thing is going to happen. Now, before we dealt with a number of abortions mainly in the Haredi world where being pregnant out of wedlock is worse than it would be anywhere else. Just being pregnant, never mind the trauma associated with being impregnated by rape, or incest, or which was in this case one of the biggest cases that we dealt with. But you know, that was nerve-wracking enough without having to worry about how to navigate a state potentially where, not in New York, but you know, in other places, navigating a state where it's not only unavailable, but they're hostile and potentially, you know, could prosecute the person seeking an abortion, anybody helping with the abortion, us winding up in a situation where people who work for Zaka, if we arrange an abortion, can find ourselves locked out of half the country because, you know, we could be potentially wanted for something, either civilly or criminally. These are concerns that we started talking about with our lawyers, because what happens if we facilitate abortions in Georgia and Texas and Florida and Ohio and in each of those places we're found out and, you know, there's a case opened against us. Obviously our states aren't going to extradite us because we're in blue states, but does that mean that we can't travel in those states? We don't know the answer to that yet, and thankfully it hasn't come up. But the idea of being locked out of, you know, somewhere between 5 and 20 states in this country, because we have to do our job, is very concerning. And it's concerning also that on top of having to deal with the stigma and the taboo of getting abortions in the Haredi world and the Orthodox world in general, but in the Haredi world in particular, of having to deal with Haredim who are ideologically not only, who are not only religiously opposed to abortion and socially opposed to abortion, but politically opposed to abortion, and may use, state power against people who are seeking abortions or people who are facilitating abortions, is very scary. And we don't have the infrastructure yet for facilitating it in those states. We're working, obviously. There's a network of people through the IFR is working with NCJW and the NEF. So this is all getting worked out, but it's very slow going. And in the meantime, there's a lot of uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen if someone calls us up from one of the states where it's been banned and asks us for an abortion. We're going to find a way to provide it, but whatever legal consequences happen are going to happen.
There's that word uncertainty again, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very, I just look at everybody's faces. pick your topic that you're feeling uncertain and overwhelmed about, and how are you managing your job and your wait list, right? I mean, and for some of you, the gun issue, for other issue, people, it's still COVID. Mm-hmm. Allison, I'm calling on you because you work with me, and you came to this meeting today. Allison is one of our amazing case managers. What did you bring? Can I call you out and ask you what brought you here?
I think that for me, it's more, a lot with COVID went untended to. I'm one of the geriatric care managers in our long-term care division. And now the clients that are coming in, it's like 2 years stuff is built up. And now we're getting higher acuity cases when we're going out there. I have a new one tomorrow I'm going out to. And it's like, they kind of waited because people weren't going out to the homes, and things kind of built up. So that's what my experience has been, certainly the cases that have been coming in for me. Not so much because I'm working with the geriatric population, the Roe versus Wade and abortion issue, but I think it touches every family, no matter where you are, for sure. And certainly the gun issue. But yeah, that's kind of where, and why I just to kind of hear other people's ideas. And when you are kind of in your own agency and you hear the same kind of stuff, it's good to always branch out and kind of see how other people are handling things. So decided to pop on.
I'm glad you did. It is kind of interesting to have this space to know that. How about some of the rest of you that we haven't heard from? What's happening in Broward?
Hey, sorry.
Down the road.
Well, I'm a clinician, but I don't, I'm not part of the clinical team here. I don't do clinical work. I just do program management for the disability services. But a lot of what you guys are saying is echoing here. We have, we're all tired and a lot of turnover, trying to get more, fill up our empty positions all over across the board. Yeah.
Do you want to make that up?
Say again?
I said it hasn't let up and more has piled on. And that's
how. Yeah, for sure.
How about Louisville? Things must be good in Louisville. I'm going to call on you guys till we find the state that's got the answer. Okay. What's happening in Kentucky?
It's the COVID stuff. It's wait lists, not only at our agency, but every agency being super long. So even when we're trying to find referrals, we can't find good places for people to go. And so then it feels like, okay, how do we make it work? How do we shift it in there? But then, you're just adding more to your people. And also with kind of this, we have a similar phenomenon where we're a little bit of a blue dot in a very, very red state. And so it's an interesting experience just with different people coming in politically. And there's still a lot of kind of processing that's happened in the last 2 years related to Breonna Taylor as well. And mm-hmm. so we're still seeing that impact here. And then having, you know, just national stories coming up and kind of triggering all of that for people that are here. It's that sense of overwhelm and feeling like I'm not really sure what to do. And then especially with clients coming in and also feeling so overwhelmed of like just finding any kind of space of refuge of like, how do we like turn this off just for a little bit? Like, how do we stop taking so much in just for a little bit? Cause we weren't built to be able to take in this much information in this period of time. So
that's a beautiful, painful way of explaining things. How do we build in time to turn this off? Cause we weren't built to take in so much information. I think that's really a brilliant point, Sarah. It really is. It's like, we really weren't built to take in so much information. And you also used the word trigger. And I think we have to be concerned at this point. We didn't have to be concerned about PTSD at the beginning because not enough months went by diagnostically to meet the criteria. Good news, enough months have gone by now. So I think we really have to, in ourselves and with our clients and with our colleagues, really kind of listen for that word trigger and for ourselves also. And it's like, we are not immune from something being re-triggering, you know, that experience of like, oh my God, I thought we were done with this. You know, people are still saying that, oh my God, I thought we were done with this.
And, you know, it's Biden was just diagnosed or came down with COVID.
Right.
I'm Alyssa. I came in late. I'm from JFS Austin. And just the piece you were just saying about triggering, one thing I haven't heard since I started was climate, and at least in Texas, the winter storm and the power grid. And as we go through the heat wave that we're currently in, the number of times ERCOT has told us to conserve energy and what that's doing for the clients here that are being triggered and re-triggered, while us clinicians are obviously doing the same thing because we lived the winter storm as well with all of the backdrop of everything else as well. That's been big.
So every community, every state has their own triggers, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things we've been talking about here is that like, I can't think of another time where as clinicians, we've been experiencing the exact same things that our clients are experiencing at the same time and being expected to like, you know, help be therapeutic and help them navigate that when we're experiencing the exact same things in the exact same timeline, where typically there's a little bit more of that separation between the concerns that the client is bringing in and, you know, what you as a therapist is doing. And so it's a really unique thing of like the uncertainty or the like the helplessness that people feel is being matched in the therapist in a lot of ways, right? That it's just a really different time to be a therapist or to be a direct service like clinical provider.
Sarah, about a year ago, I think now already, Lisa, we did a series of trainings for the network when telehealth first came out. And one of the sessions I did was countertransference during this time of pandemic. And I was looking at it the other day because I shared it with my clinicians again. And there's material it's quite profound what you're saying in this time. The thing that we pride ourselves most on as mental health professionals is our ability to maintain professional boundaries. That's the single, almost other than doing no harm, it's the single thing we hang our hat on, right? The thing that we all know what you can lose your license for, right? You know, crossing that boundary, having sex with your clients. We all knew that was like number one. And now we've just are almost 3 years in to a time when those boundaries, the very thing that we base our licenses on, has been taken away from us. and we are they. You know, there is, you know, there, it's very, very real and very challenging to navigate that. You're right. So at minimum, talking about that and acknowledging that has been
right. And we're doing our clinical work, many of us, from our homes.
Correct.
You know, so suddenly everyone gets to see, oh, who's that behind you or what's going on, you know.
Correct. And we're still talking about that, right? We're still talking about that. Yeah. That part of it alone, I mean, how many of you are not just blown away, exhausted by the fact that almost every Zoom meeting or presentation still begins with somebody having to say, I can't hear you, you're on mute. I mean, it's like, it was like fun at the beginning, but now it's just like, oof.
It's still fun.
I don't think so, Lisa. You have a you just came back from vacation. That's why it's fun for you. That's why it's fun. Anyhow, right. So what did we conclude today? I don't like to leave with a blah, although the reality is we need space to talk about our reality. Wendell, right? Isn't the answer still going to be self-care? You can't pour from an empty cup. Figure out how to do that.
There's something about prioritizing though, like so much bad stuff has happened and I try to tend to like my staff's morale. It was hard to hire people, so I don't want to lose people. I want people to be supported. And it's like trying to pick which huge crisis do I help people be okay through? And then all of a sudden we're talking about abortion and documentation and getting held liable. And I'm like, oh shit. Like I didn't even think about the legal ramifications. So now I'm like, I got to meet with PQI right after this and say, we got to do something. And it's you like, there's just so much to look at.
Pylon. The topic was pylon, Wendell.
Mm-hmm.
Glad we could add to that today.
Yeah. So.
Well, it sounds like maybe the network needs to come up with something that we can offer to the clinicians so they know if there's anything.
I don't think it exists yet, Lisa, but I think we, well, I guess what we can give to this group is a commitment so that it doesn't have to all be on your individual plates, that we will look into that and we will try to get those kind of answers like we've done with so many other issues that have come up. So, you know, you at least, if nothing else, know that you've got the support of being part of a larger network that's going to be asking those similar questions.
And you've got that resource. Remember, go to the resource library. Right. There are a lot of resources in there that we put in yesterday on this topic.
I tell clinicians all the time that work in an agency that there are a few very clear reasons why people choose to be part of an organization. And it's because nobody really winds up having to feel like they're out on the limb by themselves. And the net, and you have places with people with whom to consult. And that's what I think we can at minimum do for each other, that it doesn't have to only be you thinking like, oh shit, I heard about, you know, this legal thing today. What are we going to do about it? So I'll give that back to you, Wenzel, that, you know, we all left here feeling like, okay, you know, we're going to be figuring out some of that. And thanks for bringing up the question, whoever did, you know.
Yeah.
So, Roseanne, you wanted to say something.
I can share a positive that came out of last month's meeting.
Good.
The conversation about hiring and about how hard it was and, you know, the remote and hybrid work and hiring and this job market and competing with big business for therapists really energized me. And I had three positions open and I went back and rewrote our job description and our job blurb and how we were promoting our open positions and really just focused on work-life balance, what we have to offer in terms of supervision, our values and mission-driven organization and how no therapist should do this alone. We really just pitched to what our strengths were.
Nice.
And I have three really good, strong candidates that I, if all goes well, I will be hiring within the next few weeks.
So Roseanne, we need those job descriptions in our resource library today so that everyone on this call can go there and tweak it for their own communities.
Yeah.
That would be super helpful.
Other people within the organization are taking it and tweaking it because we had crickets. I had no applicants.
Nothing. And then suddenly, great.
We'll look for it, Roseanne, in the resource library.
Send it to me. And anything that anyone thinks other people could benefit from, let's build our clinical services resource library so that, you know, people can, you know, use it and benefit from knowledge that all of you have, right? We never want to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. Thank you for such an important conversation.
We have to end now, Asher. I'm sorry, we have to end early because I have a meeting at 2 that I have to meet with the panelists prior to the call. So
we'll see you next time.
Up with the claims conference. Okay, so we'll see you next time. Enjoy the summer, right? Okay, bye,
everyone. See you soon.